Fred Schneider III.
Thanks a whole heap!
Welcome to the Making Better podcast, interviewing some of the world's finest thinkers about a more optimistic future. Now, here are your hosts, Chris Hofstadter and Dr. Francis DiDonato.
Welcome to episode 14 of the Making Better podcast, featuring our first bona fide rock star, Fred Schneider, the lead singer of the B-52s.
Fred's such a favorite of mine on so many levels, and I think he's just been this really insightful mind in terms of what's been going on in the world, how to not let it get you down to the point where you can't party anymore.
And the B-52s have been one of my favorite acts ever since they emerged way back in the late 70s. I saw them perform many times, and this is the first time I got to talk to Fred, so it was really fun.
Yeah, and I think their work is very lighthearted because it is sort of party music. A lot of times I think the genius gets lost, but it's aged so well over time, and I'm just really delighted to have him here.
Well, with that said, let's get on to the interview. Fred Schneider, welcome to Making Better.
Thank you. Thank you. Good to be here.
Fred, this is not actually the first time you and I have met. I was one of the kids standing outside the stage door at the Capitol Theater in Passaic, New Jersey, when you guys headlined there over Kid Creole and the Coconuts, and it was a spectacular show. I just wanted to shake your hand as you were coming out, so that was the first time we met.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Kid Creole, they're great.
That was a spectacular show. I mean, everyone was dancing all night. Everyone was sweating through our clothes. I mean, both of the acts were just wonderful.
Oh, good. Well, that's the point.
You're definitely the ultimate party band. I could think of no bands that have, the music's aged better. I mean, you just have this place that's so timeless. And it's really amazing to see how you could hear the B-52s recordings from the 70s now, or the early 80s. It feels like now. I don't know how you did that.
Well, we never tried to sound like anybody else or follow trends, so... We were our own trend.
I wanted to ask you about your songwriting process, because the B-52s are both extremely accessible, but they're also abstract and surreal. And I was wondering how you manage that balance.
I think we just get people going and then they sing along. And I don't know how deeply they go into the lyrics, but they're catchy. We put a lot of work into them. We have dozens of songs that we've worked on but never finished. So I think the music gets people going along, and we have a lot of sound candy in our lyrics and vocals. And
you started out as a poet, correct?
Yes. The last thing I did before I dropped out of college, because I was so lazy, was do a book of poetry, but I wound up liking it. And eventually, later on, parts of some of the poems were incorporated into lyrics that we did.
Well, one of the things that really stands out in the B-52s is the surprising imagery and words, and I think just the fun of the lyrics.
Well, we have a sense of humor, but we're serious about having a sense of humor. I mean, I'm more influenced by Dada and surrealism than camp, so we have political references in several songs, and we mostly do the talking about political and environmental and other important social issues when we do interviews.
I remember an interview with you in Vegetarian Times about 35 years ago, in which you said something like you guys were militant vegetarians, that you would go to McDonald's and throw things at people.
No, I don't think I said that.
Well, as I said, it was an article I read 35 years ago, so I might be mistaken.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I'm sure we'd get thrown out for throwing McNuggets at people.
Part of the purpose of our podcast is we're trying to look for reasons for optimism in the world. And with all that's going on right now, I mean, we're in a time right now where there's 10,000 children in detention centers in this country. And I mean, it just goes on and on and on. I mean, the level of cruelty that has been let loose with this president we have is just, I would have thought, unthinkable.
And the Republican Party's in cahoots. And rich billionaire Koch brothers, all these other horrible people funding it. It can get pretty depressing at times, but then you have all the kids who are saying, do something about climate change, you're all going to be dead. We're going to be suffering from this. And so once we get impeached, dump, we'll see what happens. I'm sure the Senate's just going to stick their heads up their behinds and let them, give them a free pass. None of the Democrats, of course. All they need is 51 votes to get rid of them. But, you know, that's not going to happen. I find the kids protesting about climate change positive.
Greta's such a star, huh?
Oh, yeah. No, she's fabulous.
Isn't she the best?
She's a hero for a lot of people, and rightly so. And the ones who criticize her are a-holes. So I find that very encouraging. Young people are not going to put up, and they're fighting for banning guns and assault weapons and things I've supported for as long as I can remember. So it's good to see that they're really getting a lot more attention.
I do find myself getting inspired by young people. I mean, I'm 59 years old, and it's inspiring that, you know, so many, you know, I live in Florida, and, you know, the whole Parkland kids on the gun issue are really pretty amazing.
They're fantastic.
I think a really major issue right now in the world is inclusion. And one of the things I always loved about the B-52s is that I think in terms of supporting gay rights and bringing gay culture to the mainstream, you know, you guys have been sort of at the forefront of that, too.
Well, everyone's invited to our party and always has been. I mean, in the beginning, having been bullied in high school, I wasn't about to be a standard bearer, but fans knew, my friends knew, family knew. Even Elton John was in the closet. So, but, you know, gradually we got more comfortable with it. And it's like, ah, what the hell? Who cares?
I read that when you came out to your mom, she didn't even stop vacuuming.
Uh-huh. Well, good thing it was my bedroom. She was vacuuming. I think that's a great story. I know, Freddie.
Is that what she said?
Uh-huh.
I think my parents always suspected I was because, you know, I mean, the minute I started growing a little pubic hair, I had pictures of Ziggy Stardust all over my bedroom.
There you go.
Yeah. Still, like, I guess, very sort of divisive country that we have right now in terms of culture, in terms of politics. What do you see as being things that we could do to, like, heal this country or push us more into a place where people can appreciate each other's diversity?
Vote out Republican leaders and implement positive things for the average citizen, which Republicans don't do, and pull the wool over their base's eyes, and hopefully they'll realize that, well, coal's not coming back. You just lost all your manufacturing jobs. There goes your farm. When are people going to realize, whatever, you know, why should you decide what a woman does with her body, you old fart?
Exactly. Well, one of the things that I always found really kind of strange is how you have this conservative party and they preach conservatism, but actually a lot of them are the most decadent people on the planet.
They're pigs. I mean, hello, consorting with the top porn stars and hookers and a wife who was not exactly a Vogue model.
That's true. When they had the Republican convention in New York a few years ago, they had to import escorts because there weren't enough escorts in New York to facilitate the Republican convention.
Oh, well, a friend told me that whenever the Baptists come to town at the hotels, they go gangbusters with the porn.
And when the Christian right said they were going to boycott San Francisco, the people who run the Fulton Street Fetish Fair thought they'd have to close down.
Who cares? Who wants them in town? Christian wrong is what I call them.
That's Christian.
They're not even Christians. They don't follow Christ's teachings. I don't know who they... I think Satan's got them in his back pocket, so they sure act like it. And you can't tell them anything because they're so stupid. But, you know, there's other things going on. People can do their own thing with their donations and public work. I'm part of a coffee company now in Florida, and we're opening an event space in January in DeLand, Florida, for progressive groups and charities. Our coffee, we get our coffee from Laos, where we dropped 500 million pieces of ordnance. And so part of the profits from what we do goes to remove ordnance, because one of the leading causes of death in Laos is stepping on mines and things like that and losing limbs. And the other thing is to supply antivenin against snake bites. But the coffee's grown organically. To certify it costs a fortune. So we can say, you know, it's grown organically in Laos. So we do that, and men and women get equal pay. It's a very Buddhist country. It's called Breiting, Breiting.com. You know, young people and even people our age and younger who don't support conservatives really make an effort to make the country better rather than worse. Though I did like what Stormy Daniels said, make America horny again. So
one of the things that is very clear about the B-52s is they're very sex positive, but it's in a healthy way. It's not in that creepy Republican way, you know?
Oh, no. We let your freak flag fly. We're not going to judge. Just be safe. We lost so many friends to AIDS that we've done a lot of benefits and things like that and lend our name to things and just got to get the word out. Still, people need to take care of themselves. We should start putting cameras in the conservatives' bedrooms, though I don't think you see much in Mitch McConnell's, but...
Francis and I have both lost friends to the virus as well.
It was a plague, man.
So many in the early 80s. Yeah, it was scary. We just did, there's a show called Pride, and we talked about a friend of ours, Tommy Rubnitz, who passed away, and he was about to break through with his videos and art. One of his videos is in the permanent collection of the Museum of Modern Art, but he passed away in his early 30s. And so all four of us talked about what was going on in New York when we first lived there. And it was like all of a sudden from the disco era and freedom, sexual freedom, to what is this going on and will I get it? It was already in people's bodies, but no one knew it. They called it grid.
Yeah, I remember that.
Getting back to the music, if possible, I heard you're a record collector. Your record collection must be amazing.
Oh, it is.
Do you have any highlights you'd like to share? Some of your favorites in there?
Oh, boy. Well, I'm a Motown nut, so I love my Motown. Mm-hmm. I love Work Your Speaker instrumentals from the late 50s and early 60s. Mm-hmm. They call it like ping pong percussion. I've been listening to a bunch of that. I love striptease music. I love funk. I love electronic and avant-garde classical. When I did my radio show for Sirius, I played mostly new wave dance mixes that I found at the thrift store around the corner from my apartment in New York. So I'm pretty all over the place. And really bad albums, like Christmas with Barbie, I play that. I used to play a lot of stuff until my ex said, can we hear something normal?
That's something I can't imagine people say to you too often, though.
No, because I have all these friends. I do a lot of like soul clubs. I've done several soul clubs with, well, kids. Well, to me, they're kids in my age, in their late 20s, maybe early 30s. And I have extensive soul records from the 60s that they'd never heard. Even some of the ones I played at soul club 40 years ago almost in New York that were like standard to play. So I like to educate people, and I send records all over to my friends, especially 45s. They're easier.
I just inherited a huge 45 collection. I just take one out at random and put it on every day.
The new record players, the Bluetooth ones, the speakers are amazing. You can buy a cheap-ass record player and plug it into this little Bluetooth speaker thing and get full sound like you would from big speakers, as long as it sounds good and the records are clean.
You know, you mentioned something earlier in this interview that I can't get out of my mind now. There's a whole bunch of B-52 songs that never got released.
Well, they were never finished either. If we were jamming on different things and hit a wall, we'd do the Hell Tyler show or the Mary Shirley morning show and just be the celebrity guest and with different names and just do ridiculous things, sing ridiculous songs and do ridiculous commercials and...
Your Wikipedia page says that you've collaborated with a lot of other songwriters. How does that process go?
Well, right now, I have a song out with Ursula 1000 called The Neptune Freeze that's on YouTube, and they're going to have it. And I have a Hi-Fi Sean from the Soup Dragons. We have a song out called Truck. I'm working with Hardgrove from Public Enemy on a whole album. And we have a song that's going to be on the soundtrack of a movie in Mexico. I sing it in English and Spanish. It's less stressful. And of course, I have the Superions and I write all the lyrics for them. Our Christmas album's coming out again because the label before screwed us over royally and gave us nothing. But we have Bat Baby and Really Scary Halloween Story out. So I got a lot of stuff in the can and it's fun. I can do whatever I want and there's no stress.
And you live on Long Island?
Yes. I have a place in the city too, but that's more like a storage unit.
Who else was from Long Island? Lou Reed was from Long Island.
Lou Reed, Dee Snider, lives out here from Twisted Sister. I don't go to those parties you see in those glossy magazines. It has to be something really special for me to go. Well, especially in the summer, I'm usually working. But if I am here in the summer, I don't go in town on the weekends because it's so crazy. There's plenty to do here. It's becoming just like my neighborhood went from having so many neighbors and all that. I mean, I didn't know most of them, but there are people here all year round. Now it's like a bunch of rich ass people who can afford just to come out here 1 month or 2 months or just every weekend or something. So it's like, oh, brother.
It's great to have the country city balance.
Well, yeah, the county I live in has the most farmland left in relation to its size. So God bless Estee Lauder for buying up tons and tons of farms and turning them into conservancies and things.
So is there any contemporary music that you particularly find exciting right now?
I like the Fabulous Downey Brothers. I'm the worst for hearing things because when I watch YouTube, I watch either when they take like there's a preacher and there's a video called Flaming Butthole because he talks about gay people are going to have flames coming out of their butthole. And so someone turned it into a song. And the video of this idiot speaking is crazy enough, but the song is. So I like that. And I like just anything like that. I'm the worst for listening to new music because if I listen to the radio, I listen to NPR or I play my own music, you know, my own music and all that. I mean, records I have and CDs I have out the wazoo.
Well, back when you came to New York, I think your first show was at Max's, right? And there was definitely, it was an underground, you know? You pretty much had to go downtown to experience the new music back then, the punk rock, the new wave, all that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we didn't even have our first single out. And we played on a Monday night in December, which is like dead as a doornail. But we were excited because a lot of our idols played there. And back then, people didn't realize, for most of the 70s and the early 80s, New York went dark from 23rd Street down. No, well, even 34th Street down, all the way to the tip of Manhattan. The only lights were on in light were like the East Village and the West Village. Chelsea was dead. You had to go places.
There was an article in The New Yorker a couple years ago about how people approximately our age group are nostalgic for New York back when it was a sewer. And that, you know, we really miss
and
things like
42nd Street was just full of dirty movies.
Yeah.
At least it was interesting. I mean, I got mugged, but, you know, I think everyone did.
Yeah, it's kind of worth it, though, to have that atmosphere. But I really miss the existence of an underground like that. You know, I think in some ways it was like, it was just so much cross-pollination going on amongst artists. And I guess you came out around the same time as the Cramps did, right? It was sort of like the second wave of bands that came out.
Yeah, we were more the new wavers. We started out punky, and actually Lux and Ivy said they came to our first show. So I think there were only 17 people at the show. And there were three bands. I think half the people there were our friends who came up.
Is there anything you'd like to discuss that we haven't discussed about, like, say, new ventures or anything?
Well, the band is going to work on some new songs for a deluxe CD set of all our albums. So we'll have some new material. And for some reason, they're finding live shows of ours. So who knows? That'll be exciting. And the band is already booking a few shows for next year. So we'll be on our way.
I was also thinking that one of the things that I really enjoyed was the basement tapes that Bob Dylan puts out occasionally and hearing alternate takes and that sort of thing. And I think there's a lot of bands where that would be kind of excruciating to have to listen to. But with the B-52s, I think, you know, if you considered even putting out some of the, I know you like jam a lot and trying to develop songs and that sort of thing. I think I would really love to hear some of that. And I would love to hear some live tracks. So if you're thinking about doing something like that, I totally would love it.
Well, I think we're going to put out Killer Bees, the first thing we ever jammed on. I have a really good quality recording of it. Yeah, we'll see. It depends.
I think the B-52s have always had this amazing balance of being really not square at all, but also promoting this light, this beauty, this peace and love kind of thing in a way that doesn't make you nauseous. It kind of makes you want to dance. And, you know, thank you so much for doing that all these years, and the world still needs it. So keep on keeping on, you know?
Oh, we will. But that's our show. You know, we just want everyone to have just the best time. We're not going to hit them overhead with a message. There's enough depressing stuff going on. We want to be the antidote to that. We go-go dance to our own drummer.
Is there anything you'd especially like to promote or plug?
Well, just check out Breiting, Breiting.com, because we're going to be putting out blends of coffee. And like I said, we're going to host charities and progressive groups. And we're going to do contests on The Buzz, which is B-52's fan site on Facebook. And we're still going. The band's still going.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for coming on Making Better.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Fred.
Sure.
We'd love to know what you think of our podcast. Please visit us online at makingbetterpod.com. And if you feel like supporting us, leave us a review or rating in Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to us, or send us a donation. You can find the form for that on our website. Follow us on Twitter at MakingBetterPod. You can also interact with us on Facebook. Just log into your Facebook account and search for Making Better. Chris Smart deals with the audio in Samplitude X4. Susan Hofstadter deals with any visual images and transcribes our interviews. Last but not least, Amanda Rush and Jackie McBride keep our server and website running well.